There are some people with us who we don't see that often, who have been members, and I'd like to ask Jane and Tom to stand up, or maybe introduce. Jane is from
Maryland,
and is a pro in this on this subject, and a specialist on Maryland, and is going to be giving a presentation for us in December.
I had somebody come up to me in a restaurant, and I was sitting at the table by myself, and of course that meant she could only think, and she literally came up, sat across me, and said, "I've got to see the rest of the shirt." I mean, I think, and I had it was really weird, because I got this out of St. Louis when they had the last Gentech. Anybody remember those, Gentech, before they merged with the National Geological? My cousin and I had driven out there to St. Louis, and when we go to functions together, we hit the wall when we're on the thing, and we meet up at a certain time back. And so we've gone through the hall, each of us went in our own direction, and we met out front, and I think we said, "Oh, we want to see what I thought," and we both pulled out the same
T-shirt. And what does your T-shirt say for those who haven't
gotten it? Okay, genealogists. The stirring the dead is irritating the living. This is my daughter thing. She actually tells me, she says, "Warn me when you're talking genealogy, and I'll tell you how many seconds she has." You know?
And Tom, would you stand up again and tell us? Hi, nice to have you with us.
Tom Brooks, been a member of a long time. Fortunately, that was the first
business. Very welcome. All right. Okay, I think our 15-minute break is about up, and so it's time to turn things over to Mark Friedman. And take it away, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. For the next hour or so, I'd like to build on some of our previously accumulated knowledge from Terry Riegel's book, especially your presentations on tags and sentence structure as they relate to military records, especially draft registrations for World War I and World War II. I also decided, kind of at the last minute, to include the Civil War draft records, since they recently became available on Ancestry. Now, the whole idea of compulsory military service is not a new one in the United States. In fact, it dates back to Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, which says that Congress shall have the power to raise and support armies. This concept was based on the belief that every person, every man, had an obligation to bear arms in defense of his country. There were various national conscription plans considered up through the Mexican War in 1846. But none of them worked, despite offering a whole variety of inducements, including a sign-up bonus, guaranteed pay for 3 months, and 160 acres of free land following discharge. It wasn't until the Civil War that significant developments were made regarding conscription. It was the first American conflict in which soldiers were drafted on both sides. The Confederacy enlisted troops for a one-year tour of duty, and Northern volunteers enlisted for periods of 3 or 9 months. Both plans were found to be inadequate to raise the necessary manpower, and both sides turned to compulsory conscription. In 1862, the Confederacy became the first to enact a draft and the Union followed in March 1863. I'll say right up front, I don't know a squat about Confederate draft registration, where the records are, or any of that. If any of you would like to chime in with that information at the end, I'd be happy to hear you. Now, the New York draft riots in July 1863 were the largest civil insurrection in American history, apart from the Civil War itself. President Lincoln sent several regiments of militia and volunteer troops in to control the city. The rioters, thousands of them, were overwhelmingly working class men. They were resentful of the draft, among other reasons, because the draft unfairly affected the poor while sparing wealthier men who could afford to pay a $300 commutation fee to exclude themselves from the draft. This may strike a chord with some of you who remember the Vietnam era draft. The exact death toll during the New York draft riots is unknown, but the best estimates suggest that at least 120 civilians were killed, including at least 11 black men who were lynched, and at least 2,000 people were injured, and property damage was estimated between $1 and $5 million. Doesn't sound like much now. I'm sure then that was quite a sum of money. Moving forward in our key events, the Selective Service and Training Act, passed in 1940 in anticipation of World War II, was the first peacetime conscription bill. A key provision of this act was that conscientious objectors would not be forced into the army or confined in prison as they had been in the past. After registration and classification as a conscientious objector, they were offered a choice of different kinds of non-combat training. They could go in as medics, or they could volunteer to be human guinea pigs for various medical experiments. And I guess some of those were pretty horrible. Or they could do what was called work of national importance under civilian direction. This alternative service included staffing mental hospitals, working on conservation projects, and similar duties. Those conscientious objectors who refused to do any of this still risked imprisonment. Now, what kinds of information can you get from draft registration records? As you can see from this slide, it varies by the conflict, but in any case, it's a lot. And a lot of this information could be very useful to a genealogist, especially when you combine it with other military records, such as pension applications. Going back to the Civil War, I thought we'd start with my great-grandfather. Fortunately, I knew enough about him already to make this search relatively easy. If you're an ancestry, and that's where I got this information, you should go to this URL. I've bookmarked it since I use it frequently. Now, you'll see where I entered some of the information they asked for, like his name, the year of his birth, where he was born, and where I thought he was living at the time of the draft registration in 1863. And before I browsed, I entered his state, which was Missouri. I didn't know the congressional district, so I left that blank, and I clicked search down here. Here's what I got. 4 hits. Of these 4 hits, the first one appears most likely to be my ancestor, since all the data are correct. He was married, he was born in 1843, he was white, and it tells me he was living in the 7th Congressional District. So we'll click on that record and see what we get. Lo and behold, it's a register page. Now, the full-size register pages were on ledger-sized paper, so I'd need a heck of a big screen, or you wouldn't be able to see the entries to display all the columns. So I just copied and pasted enough to show what I needed to decide that I found the right guy. In the middle line here, William Dixon, age 20, and he was married. A couple of things you don't see here are that he was a resident of Jackson Township, which I knew, and that he was white. I was also interested to note that my 43-year-old great-great-grandfather was listed a few lines down on the same page. Okay, so let's assume that I transcribed this information correctly. What do I do with it in TMG? Well, I'm going to click on Tools, Master Tag Type List, and look at the General tab. I note that there's nothing like Civil War draft registration on the list, so I'll have to add a new tag type. I clicked Add and proceeded to fill in the fields here. For label, I use something descriptive. In this case, CWDFTREG. The past tense for this action was registered, and the abbreviation REG. And that is, and it goes in the tag group for other event. And that's the same tag group that's used for other military type events. Next, I'll click on the roles and sentences tab in the middle. For the principal, the male sentence structure, I just edited that to say that principal registered for the Civil War draft on a date in this location. The female sentence structure would be the same, so I left that blank. And the witness sentence structures, I left those blank and clicked OK to save my work. The process for building these tag types is exactly the same for World War I and World War II draft registration entries. So let's move on to World War I. We declared war on Germany on April 6, 1917, and we officially entered World War I about 6 weeks later. On 18 May, Selective Service Act was passed, which authorized the President to increase the size of the military establishment of the United States. As a result, every male living within the United States between 18 and 45 years of age was required to register for the draft. period from 1880 to 1920, you may remember, was a high immigration period for the United States. Young men were required to register for the draft regardless of their citizenship status. Now, of course, not all the men who registered actually served in the armed forces. And there were some who enlisted and served, but therefore didn't have to register for the draft. In 1917 and 1918, approximately 24 million men living in the United States completed a World War I draft registration card. These registration cards represent approximately 98% of the men under the age of 46. So obeying the law was apparently a far bigger and more important deal back then. The total U.S. population in 1917 and 1918 was about 100 million individuals. So, in other words, and this is where it's really worthwhile for genealogists, close to 25% of the total population is represented in these draft registration records. Now, what the database is the actual draft registration cards. And Ancestry makes the statement, and this may be true, that if you had family in the United States during World War I, you're likely to find at least one relative's information within this collection. But the cards contain a lot more than just names and dates. They can contain significant genealogical information, like birthplace, citizenship status, and information on the individual's nearest relative, usually a spouse or a parent. All of the records that were not destroyed were transferred to the National Archives in 1942 and 1945. But the original registration cards were in the custody of the Bureau of the Census until 1989. And at that time, they were transferred to the National Archives as well. As you can see here, there were three separate registrations, and each one used a slightly different version of the card. And because different cards were used, the information included in each registration varies slightly. The original cards are kept in East Point, Georgia, at the local regional office of the National Archives. Each National Archives regional office have microfilm copies of the cards for their respective states. In addition to the original cards, digitized copies are maintained by Ancestry.com. Now, as I said, there were three draft registrations. First one had 12 questions, the second one 10 questions, and the third 20 questions. And I promise that we'll try to get this little table included when my presentation is put in the next newsletter. I ran across, almost ignored it, but I ran across what I called a historical curiosity with the first two draft registrations. The front of each card included a little corner you can see here, it was to be cut out of the form if the registrant was of African descent. Now, I'm sure nowadays something like this would be strictly illegal. But in 1917 and 18, this was probably nothing out of the ordinary.
I have an example of one.
Ah! Okay. Oh, that one has the corner cut out.
Both sides. Well, obviously, it's two sided corner.
I'll be darned.
Well, they say they're African American, and it's the family that is next door to one of my relatives. So.
And of course, the person, the clerk, or whoever was doing the registering, would have to decide the person's whether the person was of African descent or not by observing them. So, anyway.
But so going back to the chart, there was no indication of race on the chart.
No. Let's see, previous.
No, it doesn't have to.
They are asked to indicate race. Do you have, can you see what the race categories are on either of those cards?
It was on all three.
No, it does not have a race indication on here.
Okay.
It has obviously color of skin.
Colored?
Well, you know, complexion, they call it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Dark.
Complexion of skin. And that one does not say the race at all anywhere on here.
Okay.
Complexion of skin. You know, I know it says it up there, but it doesn't have it on this on the one.
Okay.
It just has the corner cut off.
No. When you're searching or looking at these cards, there's a few things that you should keep in mind. Some Italian immigrants wrote their last names first, and that resulted in some cards being filed under the first name. Also, cards of Hispanics may be filed under their mother's maiden name. If the registrant gave both parents' surnames. Men who resided in British territories, like Jamaica, Canada, Australia, sometimes listed themselves simply as British citizens without noting their country of origin. Illiterate men were often unable to spell their names or their birth location, so you may need to be flexible in your searching for specific names. Cards for Native Americans, prisoners, the insane, people in hospitals, and late registrants are filed separately at the end of the microfilm series. And these films are not available at every archives facility. And as I said earlier, the man was already serving in the military. He didn't need to register. Because each registered male had to sign the draft card to attest to the truthfulness of his statement, you can see the actual signature of your relative. And, you know, but some illiterate men may have signed with an X. And it's very important to remember that not all men who registered for the draft actually served in the military. And definitely not all men who served in the military registered for the draft. In many areas, my mother told me about this. She was born in 1909, so she has some memory of it. In many areas, the draft registration was a real event. Some cities held parades and they closed businesses for the day. Had picnics and rang the fire whistles and so on. Made a big deal of it. And as we've said, the World War I cards include images of the actual draft registration cards. You can browse these images by locality, state, city, county, draft board. Or you can search the index using name, birth date, and birthplace. People often ask, does the database contain entries for any famous people? Well, it does. And I put a little two-page front and back handout in your materials. And the voyeurs among you can go in and look at the draft registration cards for Ty Cobb, Jack Benny, Norman Rockwell, various other celebrities at that time. Yes, sir.
You know, I've never seen Cross Check Beta. The guy's birth date.
What's that?
You know, I've been ever cross check whether the person actually did the right birth date.
I have no idea. That might happen if the person was drafted. You know, they drafted what they thought was a 44-year-old, and 74-year-old showed up. I don't know.
That's an interesting question. Did they have to bring their own birth certificate with them when they registered?
It was a bad one.
That's what they. A lot of folks didn't even have birth certificates in those days.
They didn't have it either.
Yeah.
Remember, these were local draft boards, and they kind of knew everybody in the area, and they just took them.
I happen to be a member of the Fairfax County, or one of the Fairfax County draft boards, and we've been told if there's any doubt to ask the registrar to bring documentation, but we won't get convened until there is a shooting war. We just go for training every 2 or 3 years. Moving on to World War II. There were actually 4 registrations. But only the 4th one, the last, is currently available to the public because of privacy laws. And it's what's called the old man's registration because it included men aged 45 to 64. The information on these cards included the name of the registrant, age, birth date, birthplace, residence, employer information, which was a big help in classifying some people into military jobs, physical description, and the name and address of a person who would always know the person's whereabouts. For that 4th registration, though, coverage was a little spotty. It includes cards for the states in this top section of the slide. But the collection is incomplete. The original cards for this, at the second bullet, were destroyed several years ago and were never microfilmed. So there'll never be records for those states in this database.
Mark, do you know if they don't have the District of Columbia either?
I am not sure about the District of Columbia. It looks like it was, judging from these two lists, it looks like it was excluded.
There's several other states missing too, so are they just not, haven't scanned them yet? Or
I don't know. I can certainly check on that.
So I was thinking that maybe they just haven't been done yet.
Unlikely that the D.C.
one
would be destroyed.
Mm-hmm. I'll see what I can find out.
Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan are among the missing.
Ah, Minnesota, Michigan.
Wisconsin.
Iowa. Kansas. Oh, I'm sure there are other states. So I think we had 48 at the time.
Where did you get this list from?
Ancestry.
Okay, so that may just be one that they got included in their, that's, in their images so far.
That's possible.
Now, is this the old man's from?
Yeah, these were this was the old man's registration.
What are the asterisks?
Beg your pardon?
The asterisks of a few of the states.
Probably partial. The cards are, the original cards are held by each state's National Archives regional branch. And they're also available on microfilm from the Family History Library. Cards are arranged by state and then in alphabetical order by surname, followed by the local draft board number. And here's a card for one of my distant cousins, Samuel Browning Dixon. He was living in Portland, Oregon at the time and was 62 years old.
Mark, he was registered. Do you know if he served?
Beg pardon?
Do you know if he served?
No.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
Did he serve?
Did he serve? No. No. He's too old.
Yeah, but I was just wondering if you registered, you were required evidently.
No.
He did. It's patriotic.
That's just your duty to register. Yeah, you could get called up for a physical and get disqualified on one of many grounds.
My father was deferred because he was managed to own a small business.
Yeah.
And he wrote.
The people in certain occupations were excused from service.
Farmers,
teachers. Clergy, I think.
My dad, he was a machinist, and of course they took him, they sent him to Hawaii, but he was just a civilian, and he, they didn't take him because he
mm-hmm.
otherwise to do on ships.
My father had a first cousin who was an engineer, civilian, working for the Navy. Poor guy ended up a prisoner of war in the Philippines for 3 years.
I had a great uncle who served in the First World War and then went in the Navy. on all sorts of different ships. And then when the Civil War came along, he would go, he went and enlisted.
Now, the next 4 points I want to cover are really outside the scope of draft registration, but I wanted to mention them anyway. Army enlistment records for World War II. Here are the data items included. And this database contains information on about 8.3 million men and women who enlisted in the Army during World War II, enlisted or were drafted. Their term of enlistment was normally shown as for the duration as determined by the President. Grave sites, veterans' grave sites, between 1775 and 2006. It's a compilation of burial records from a variety of sources and cemeteries, including Arlington. And these records provide information on the burials of U.S. veterans and their dependents who were buried in the various VA national cemeteries, state veteran cemeteries, and other military cemeteries, including all the ones located overseas.
Is that on Ancestry? Can you find it through Ancestry?
Yes. Yeah. Now, because the information regarding the burials is compiled from multiple sources, the amount of information provided for each burial will vary quite a bit. Some of the information you may find in this database includes name of the deceased, birth date, death date, interment date, burial location, plot number, and so on, the cemetery name and address, the service dates of the veteran, their highest military rank, and their branch. And if they did something special, like won a Medal of Honor, would probably include their citation for that award. Cemetery records can be great sources, as I'm sure we all know. Oftentimes, they're the only records that provide believable birth and death information. And they'll also give you clues if you didn't know which branch of the military your ancestor served in. Cemetery records might give you a clue where to look next. Pension records, a wonderful source. I've got pension records from the Civil War, and they are a real godsend. And they provide probably the most comprehensive genealogical information. They have supporting documents in there frequently. Narratives of events that happened during their service, marriage certificates, birth records, death certificates, pages from family Bibles, family letters, depositions of witnesses, affidavits, discharge papers, you name it. But it's a rich source. And finally, bounty land warrant applications. A lot of these have been combined with pension files. But many of the bounty land application files do pertain to the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812. So a search of those records might be worthwhile as well. And they often contain documents similar to those in pension files. So, if you have an ancestor that served in the military, you could start by trying to determine some basics. What branch of service was your ancestor in? What conflict? About when? Whether he was a regular army or in a volunteer unit? Whether he was an officer enlisted? And whether there was a pension application? And whether he enlisted or was drafted. There is a publication at this URL at the bottom of the page called An Overview of Records at the National Archives Relating to Military Service. It's a wonderful thing to have a copy of. In addition, there's a kind of an all-purpose list of links to military sources and reference material by branch of service or by military engagement at this era. So it's but as far as specifically what to do in TMG, once you've found some draft registrations, you may need to build one, two, or all three of these tags. So, Paul?
Yeah, how do you compose your source for these? What do you do about sources? Do you, use a single source category and define it that you use, or do you have multiple sources?
Well, I tend to be a lumper in that regard, so I often will go with the suggested citation that's there in Ancestry.
So, as a lumper, you would think you would say that you got it from Ancestry, but it refers to the World War I draft records,
yeah,
of a certain type, held at the National Archives in this record group and so on.
Exactly. Did I see another hand? Ma'am?
Well, I have one. There's a tag in TMG that says military service.
Uh-huh.
So, what's the advantage of building these specific?
Well, military service. Go ahead.
Military service is just kind of general. Here you can say stuff like registered for the draft.
He may never have served. He may have registered for the draft.
Most people who registered for the draft never served.
That's right. And the old men never did. Well, I can't say that because I just now, my great grandfather was actually in the military and in the old man draft. But but that's why we need a separate, because it's not military service, it's registration for the draft, you know. And it contains information that you don't necessarily get any other place.
Good save, thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Do you know if when people were signing up for the World War I draft registration, whether they filled out the whole card themselves or whether they stood in line, somebody else filled it out and they just signed it?
Usually the cards were filled out for them by a clerk or a draft board member, asking them the questions. And you had a lot more folks back then who could neither read nor write.
Well, one of the reasons I asked is that our family had had for many years a different opinion of how my grandfather spelled his middle name. And he meant Carol, usually it's two R's, two L's, but was it one R, one L, was it two R's, one L, was it two L's, one R. And he never signed his name with that full name, and we had family members, "Why name my child after our grandfather, and it was spelled this way." I named my, and then I found him a World War I draft card. It's the only thing I've ever found with his name spelled out, and it's the way my mom always did the spell. But instead, rather than Jacob Carroll, he signed it Jacob C. But I believe, though, that so somebody asked me, did he fill out the card? Well, his penmanship looked similar, but a lot of penmanship styles back then were very similar.
Did any of the census records indicate that he could neither read or write?
No, he could, but he was on the Board of Education. He could go beautifully.
Okay.
But I figured then that he probably would not have signed it if the name had been spelled up there at the top. But I built their own so I don't know. But right now, that's the only record I have, and that is the record I am using for the spelling of his name.
But in doubt, go with what you got. Yes, sir.
I have similar records. I find World War I draft records very helpful. The name questions. I have a great uncle whose family records always had Titus C. No one knew what the middle letter was. Family didn't know, no records, no one. I finally got the World War I draft. He signed his name, Titus Matthias Hill. Only record we find where his middle name is spelled out. I have a similar, another great uncle whose name was Peter Staley, Otto Staley. Family records had never seemed to be consistent. Again, I found the World War I draft record. He signed his name as Staley, Otto Jackson. So I again took that.
That doesn't necessarily mean, because I just had a father and a co-worker die yesterday, and according to the Obit, and his name was Alan Lester Furlow, and even the Obit had Lester Allen Furlow because he referred to Lester over the Allen. So if there's all family going to change the name,
But if you have no other record and the man signed his signature in an 18 or age 20 or something, I bet that
is one
source of.
Yeah, and they must have been telling them to fill out their full names, because I have lots of them.
Question, sir?
Just a comment. I was looking at Wayne County, Illinois, a couple of days ago, and they met across a special census. I think it was 1862 for Wayne County, and there were two censuses in the world. One was reserves, and one was. In Illinois, there was a special census around the time of the Civil War, and I came across some great information from
I've been finding some good leads in it. I guess I thought it was an unexpected source. Any of you ever use Find a Grave?
Mm-hmm.
I found a lot of military references in there. Some of proved fake, some are genuine. It's a good place to look.
What was that one again?
Find a Grave.
Oh, yeah.
Findagrave.com. Any other questions, comments?
Yes, I mentioned about the Confederate. About the Confederate records, I found my husband's ancestor down at the courthouse in the county. So somebody's been working. He gave a deposition, trying to get some kind of pension. And then also, of course, I found it also in the library of Virginia State Library.
What's that?
This is Carol down in Grayson County, Virginia. from Western Virginia. And then I found it online, actually.
Yes, remember the Confederate soldiers weren't entitled to Union soldier pensions.
Right, but he did get one. He was
he can get a local role.
Yes, right. And that's why I was saying you might look at the county and support us.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
We have a little bit of time for people to
get ready.
I'm going to try to tell you my filter for finding the people in World War I draft.
Okay. Ken's going to give us a demonstration, and this is also a chance for anybody who has any new genealogy information to share that with the rest of us. For example, does anybody have any idea when TMG ate?
It's mythology.
If you have questions about it or give demonstrations about it, now's the time to do it. Okay.
I believe that this has been one of my prior presentations on filters. Okay, it's a filter I had developed for, it looks like it's messed up, but people whose surname is White, not the right filter. You can go to the website for the love, and these were just the characteristics that I came up with to try and locate people based on the data that they had in ancestry for the earliest people they started registering when they would have been born until the end, and then still figuring out people who were dead already. And that sort of thing. But it is in one of our, to go back into the meeting presentation, it's one of the filter ones, with the attachment with the different, favorite filters, what was called, in the favorite filters presentation. This can be modified, obviously, to cover the Civil War. You just have to change the name.
So these are the people who would be eligible?
Yeah, that would have been born after September 12th, 1872. Who were born before September 13th, 1990, because that's the youngest people they took. And then they have died before the first draft registration.
Is it 1900?
September 13th, 1990, and how I did that, and how I do all these filters like this for for ancestry, is I go in military, go down here for the details about the collection. It'll tell you that kind of stuff. Okay, so you go down here and it's got all this detail, and it gives you the date. For men born between 6 June 1886 and 5 June 1896. And I took the furthest out date, which I think it's got bigger down here, 1872 here, and then the September 12th, 1996. And then you can plug those into your filter, and you can do the same thing for whatever registration you're looking at. For example, the World War II registration one gives you the same kind of info. You just go to the details about that particular database, look for the dates for it, and then you can do your search based on those dates. And then these sort of get rid of the can't remember now what all the exact ones were, but I wanted to make sure I got rid of this, which comes after 1917. Or they didn't have any death tags, because you may not have ever put a death tag in there, so you didn't want to leave those people out. The date is empty if you have a death tag, or was there a regular, which is something like died young and I can't find it. So that's what all those were. But you could actually just do the simple one and end up living a couple of these by taking those top four.
Is this for your project? Or
yes, this is my own project. This is my own project. That way you have your list of people who are possible candidates, and then right. You can do your research. And because this is a list of people report, you can actually take this, I believe, you can print this, run this as a report, okay? You can change tag, make a flag, a special flag, and flag it, and then you can sort your project before. I'm going to show you that option. Secondary output. Here you can do a special flag if you've got one you have one in here already. Okay, took it out. But you can create a flag for World War I draft, and then cancel. When you run the report, it'll change that flag for everybody, and then when you go back out here, I'm just going to cancel report my project. Over here, you can sort by that flag, you can do a filter, and then your project explorer, you can run a setup with your project explorer, and just a detail program. And run it for all the people who have that particular flag. And then you just go through and sort, go down each person and look for them and then put the info in and then go to the next person and change their flag so they don't show up on the list. And work your way through that whole day.
This is seven.
And this is just a layout that I did for if you want to really have all the project explorer stuff available. But you can sort it. I'm going to also put in here and see if I can find it. What I call World War I pool. But you don't have any flags. You can use your project explorer. See some of the list of people flags that doesn't have to carry out anything. Got a lot to do, and you've got seven conditions in there. Okay, so all these people are candidates for World War I, and you can see I've already found them. So what I actually need is to add another condition that says that they already have a tag, so that I get rid of the people who have the tag. I'm not sure if I'm not in here for the project explorer. So each of these people is a candidate, and quite a few of them I may have already found. See, there's another one. Now, some of these are so far, very collateral that I haven't bothered looking for them. Here's one. And then the way I do my sources on this is I just have one source for the World War I draft registration cards. And since it came from Ancestry, this I did a long, long, long time ago. I probably have it cleaner now. But I put the data from Ancestry, where it says all that info. I'm going to show you what it looks like on the print. It came from that database information page, and then put it in as record info, and then it says World War I draft registration cards online, ancestry.com, original publication, you had the Celtic Service model. You're an anthracite. And so the next time I use that source, instead of saying all that over again, it'll just say World War One draft registration cards, and then what do I put in the CD? And what I put in the CD is the information that shows up. Usually, if you go into the draft registration card, when you click on somebody's,
Jan, do you have a separate source for each of the three?
No, I didn't do it.
For World War One?
I just did one, because it's all in one database anyway. So, I mean, really, actually, the source is the Ancestry database with the World War One draft registration card.
Okay.
Okay. And the same for the World War II one.
I
had a thank you for them. They did the three things for the weekend, and I found my grandfather doing the shooting. Did they just do World War II?
World War II had, this is the old man's right?
Only the old man.
Okay, that's the only thing that's common. And if you look at their April 28th, 1877 through February 16th, 1897. Okay, so you know, at this time they were 40, I think it was done in 41, 42, 47. So, you know, they were already 43 at that time. So, that's why they said that most of them did not end up serving. But they did, it was because they said they were just living in this place. Yankee was down. Okay. Any questions?
It's just a general point. Although we talked about the old man, was there some kind of sunrise old man when the younger man's data might become available? In other words, it wasn't a total privacy.
So,
72 year old. So it's coming up.
Okay.
Yeah.
2 years
from now.
I have an ancestor that I know served in the Civil War, but I wasn't finding his name in the draft. So you could join without him signing up in the draft. Is that correct? Because I was puzzled about that. Wait, why didn't you join us?
Yeah. And the same thing for World War One. You're not going to find them in World War One draft registration cards.
They already joined before the draft cards.
I have an anomaly there because my great grandfather and his brother were enlisted early on in the Civil War. But the Civil War draft records, I had to make a note. And they are listed in the draft records. They were in service at the time. But the Osasco County, Indiana draft record, somebody had wrote their names in the draft record.
Yeah.
All their information.
But World War One, I haven't found.
No, it was just
Civil War.
Civil War, they wrote their names in, even though they were in service at the time.
It actually show all the records in that county.
I don't know.
I don't know. But I didn't even know the Civil War was there. I just found two while we were talking.
Many of the Civil War people signed up in 3 months and they were out again.
And drafted again.
Re-enlisted or drafted, whatever.
Anybody have any questions or anything else?
Oh, there was something that the speaker said that the records are kept in East Point, Georgia. That's not true anymore. The archives have moved to Morrow, Georgia, M-O-R-R-O, south of Atlanta, and in the middle of nowhere. So that's where they have moved the.
Well, you know, that's all in the wind. That will
be cheaper.
And not necessarily. You're right on Interstate 175. So Atlanta's the largest metropolitan area in the world. But that is, yeah, East Point was much closer to Atlanta, you know, than more.
Thanks, Dan. Remind you that next month, Dan and Bob Weaver will be doing custom tag types. And John Clark, Vancouver is following. And I'm still looking for people to come forward with ideas or volunteered presentations for October and November.
I have a question. There's a lot, there's more people than we can count, and maybe it's just because everybody's back from vacation. But I was curious if those of you who go into the comments came today for any particular reason.
Because a lot of meetings are held on the second Saturday, except for during the summer.
That makes sense.
Anybody else?